Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Rebecca's giggling. Bill English is giggling. What kind of party's going on here? Include me. What's going on?
I said we shouldn't be allowed to congregate. And then Bill said...
I said, well, you know, but that's a meeting, right? You know,
There's a difference between
meeting and congregating.
And I said, yeah, well, two or three are gathered here. Oh, wait, there's no practical purpose, is there?
And I said, oh, that's meetings.
Oh,
these are things that make us laugh.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Well, the next hour with Bill English and then Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog is going to come in. So the next hour is going to be so packed, you might have to let your belt out. And that's just a kind of a warm up for tomorrow, because that's usually what happens tomorrow as well. And, you know, they always talk about the turkey coma, which is you eat so much turkey and you have that tryptophan and that makes you tired. But that's a big lie. It's just you overeat. That's what makes you tired, having too much food. But we should be grateful that we have so much abundance in our country. And I have a heart for the people who are suffering this year and who don't have the meal that we all might be enjoying. So pray for them. Look for opportunities to maybe help someone, volunteer if you can, or maybe donate to an organization that's helping feed people tomorrow. There's probably still lots of opportunities. Looks like a turkey named Drumstick got the presidential pardon. I can't remember if that was the one that had the strong strut or the other one that liked.
I think he was tall and proud, wasn't
tall,
he?
Maybe he was tall and proud. Is that the one that liked Journey?
Or
was that the one that liked country music?
Again, these are things that make us laugh on the morning show. It was Drumstick versus Wishbone. That's what it was.
Yeah, and technically one got pardoned, but they both get to live. So that made me happy. I thought one was going to be dinner. But anyway, we're going to take a little break, and then Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com. Well, it's 6 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. We are plenty upbeat in the studio today, aren't we? It's 8 minutes after the hour. So Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com sauntered in, and he's got a grateful heart today. So we're going to have a opening discussion of gratitude.
Gratitude. What are we grateful for?
Well, first of all, can you be a happy person if you're not full of gratitude?
I think it gets to be tougher. I think your happiness is more of a temporary thrill rather than a long-term happiness.
But if you have gratitude in your heart, you're gonna live a very happy, sustained life. If you have ingratitude, you're gonna have a victim mentality. You're gonna be angry. You're gonna think I'm entitled to stuff. Things aren't going my way. I don't like the way things are working out in life.
And most people filled with gratitude are also people who are filled with contentment. And so I don't know how you can be a discontent or an uncontent or a person and yet still have lots of gratitude.
Talk about the word content, because content, who uses that word nowadays? And before you answer that, I want to ask our listeners, if you are grateful for something and you want to share it, please give us a call, 1-877-933-2484, or you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. All right.
So it's 877. I like to give out the numbers. So 877-933-2484.
Okay.
Look, contentment is wanting what you already have rather than wanting what you don't have. Most marketing and most advertising in America is designed to make us want something that we don't have.
True.
So that we can go buy it. And then in theory, we will be happier and more content and more fulfilled. Seems to me that most malls in America are filled with people who are just trying to find something to tranquilize their discontent, to tranquilize their boredom. And so if they just buy one more thing, yay. Mm-hmm. But that's what contentment is. Contentment is wanting what you already have.
Okay. I was talking this morning, Bill, about Augustine, and he talks about disordered loves. And we, you know, things that we should love third, fourth, or fifth, we make number one. So we oftentimes, if we put our security in our money, and that starts to go in the wrong direction, we start asking God to help us with our finances and the things that we think are going to make our lives happier. But we have a disordered love, and we need to make Christ first in our lives always, and the supremacy of Christ always number one.
Being able to love God purely and unconditionally and being free of sin and being filled with wisdom and pursuing wisdom, if you look at the kind of the major arc of Scripture, those are the elements that Scripture says will bring you the most happiness and the longest life.
Now, Augustine went on to say that if basically, you know, if we make financial prosperity our main source of safety and security— and confidence, and then when that becomes in jeopardy, he says we basically cry out to God for help, but our prayers are a little more than worrying in God's direction.
If your security and your happiness is in your money, and then you lose it and you cry out to God for help to get your money back, all you're really doing is saying, God, please help me continue to worship my idol.
Right.
And how do you think God's going to look at that?
Yeah. Augustine says, when our prayers are finished, we'll be more upset and anxious than before. Prayer will not be strengthening. It won't heal our hearts by reorienting our vision and helping us put things in perspective and bringing us to rest in God as our true security.
And the perspective is getting God's perspective on our wealth and on our security. And what is God's perspective on wealth? What is God's perspective on security?
You go ahead.
Do you want me to answer?
Yeah, I'm not answering.
You want me
that.
To answer my own question?
Yeah, of course I do.
Rebecca's over here laughing at us. Look, it
not
just
the
seems,
first time.
And it won't be the last.
No.
Look, it just seems to me that God's perspective on money is that it's a necessary element in our lives to barter, to do exchange back and forth. But money doesn't represent anything to God other than the ability to make exchanges for goods and services. God's perspective is that our dependency should rest in Him and in what He provides for us. Not because He provides it, but because of His character and the promises that He's given to provide us, to provide for us is what I should say.
All right. I don't mean to get overly personal this morning, but why not?
Why not?
Maybe you'd be willing to talk about some of the things that you're personally grateful for that might inspire our listeners to call and say what they're grateful for.
The number one thing that I'm grateful for today is God's forgiveness.
Nice.
Because I know what a heel I can be, but a really dirty, rotten scoundrel I can be. And for the amount of sin that I have committed in my life, I'm so very grateful for God's forgiveness. And I know that He'll make everything right in the end, and that some things that I've done that I can't make right, He will make right. And so, in all honesty, the number one thing I'm always grateful for is the fact that God has forgiven me, He loves me, and He has taken a very carnal, cussed, ornery, arrogant guy and has given him a love and a gentility and a different character that he would never have had otherwise.
So we can go right to the cross and see that sacrifice, to see that
him
willingly lay his body on that cross as they pounded the nails in his beaten, bloodied body, and He did it for us.
He did it for us. That is the gospel. Mm-hmm. That is the amazing thing here, right? That we are His friends because He laid down His life for us, right? And we didn't deserve it. By any stretch of the imagination, we didn't deserve it.
Yeah, that makes me pause.
Yeah, me too.
It makes me pause and reflect on the glory of what happened.
And the second thing that I'm very grateful for is a very loving wife who loves me in spite of all of that and cares for me and adores me and has been faithful through the thick and thin. Now, you know, she's married to an entrepreneur who has made a lot of money and lost a lot of money. And she has been on the roller coaster ride with me, this poor gal she stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very grateful for Kathy. I love you, honey, and I'm thankful.
Yeah, you assume she's listening.
Well, if she isn't, then, you know, she listens most mornings, but she doesn't always listen every morning. So,
all right. I know there's a couple more on the list. If you want to give us a call and chime into the conversation, 1-877-933-2484. We'd love to hear what you're grateful for. It's 15 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 17 minutes after the hour. Certainly hoping to hear from a caller today. Would love to hear from someone in the, maybe even in the Madison area who's can pick up the phone and call and say, hey, this is what I'm grateful for. Would love to hear from anyone today. Because I know that we were talking during the break, and Bill, you had mentioned that gratitude is a kind of a deeply personal, what did you say? How did you say that?
I said it's a serious thing. You know, deep gratitude is deeply serious. It's not a flippant thing where you might say to somebody, hey, thanks for, you know, making me a couple Pop-Tarts.
Right, right.
You know, they come out of the toaster and you're happy you have two warm strawberry icing-filled Pop-Tarts.
Stop it. You're I know, making this I know. Hard all
well,
of a sudden.
Me and Pop-Tarts have a wonderful and glorious history.
All right.
But real gratitude that really changes your life is deeply personal and deeply serious.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've got a caller on the line, Sherry from Cottage Grove. Good morning, Sherry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What are you grateful for?
I'm really grateful that I was raised in a godly environment. My parents and grandparents were so godly. And my latest thing is we have grown children that just honor us. They're honorable. They honor their parents. And I'm just so thankful for the grown children I have. They just treat us like gold, and it just almost makes me weep. But you know that they treat us the way they do, and I'm so thankful.
And Sherry, that is so sweet, and I can hear the gratitude. And like Bill just said, gratitude is a deeply serious thing, isn't it? This is really important. It's really serious, isn't it?
I know children that don't honor their parents, and I'm 72 and my husband, but our kids are always there for us.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Mm. Sherry, you just made our morning. Thank you so much for calling and sharing that. I know that's going to inspire others.
You know.
And have a happy Thanksgiving.
Is she there?
No.
Did we lose her?
That's all right.
Okay, so you know what? Honor of the elderly is not something our culture does, but it is something that Christians do, because the Christians really honor the elderly and honor wisdom. And usually wisdom resides with the elderly.
Yeah. 1-877-933-2484 if you want to give us a call and tell us what you're thankful for. Sherry's call was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. I know there's not a lot of parents that can make that statement.
Which is sad.
It's terribly sad.
It is very sad.
Yeah. So, all right, let's get back to your list. Speaking of happy and what you're grateful for is number three is... You say you've got two kids who are following the Lord.
I do. I have an 18-year-old daughter, a very precocious 18-year-old daughter, and a 20-year-old son. And my son is out.
I met your son.
You met David?
I met David, handsome guy.
Really?
Yeah. Sharp. Yeah. I thought was very impressed.
He's doing his second year with YWAM. So last year he did the DTS, Discipleship Training Services, and he spent 3 months in Belize doing discipleship training, and then 2 months in Paraguay doing mission work. This year, he's out at Lakeside, Montana, doing School of the Bible. Right?
Nice.
And they are studying the Bible for 9 months, like 40 or 45 hours a week.
Wow.
And he's just drinking it in, and I'm so proud of him. And my daughter is just such a cool, funny person. I sit with my daughter and I just laugh because she has such a good sense of humor. And she is wanting to go to a Christian college, and she hasn't quite picked one yet. And she loves the Lord. She does a lot with the basement and other elements. She's witness to her friends, and she gave her testimony at FCA.
Wow.
At the high school. And so...
I'm impressed.
Proud
and pleased.
Of both of them.
Yeah, what a blessing. All right, let's talk about in the Garden of Eden, work was designed to be a blessing, and then sin entered, and then it became a little bit of what people consider a curse sometimes, don't they?
It is a curse.
However, you, my friend, see it as a blessing.
It is. Work is a gift from God. It existed in the garden before mm-hmm. the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is something that I think we will do in heaven. I think we will have work in heaven, although I think it will be much more productive. So it just seems to me that work is something that gives us dignity. It helps us provide for our families, and it helps us bring goodness to the community in which we live. It helps the community to flourish, and it helps develop us as individuals. And so work is a gift from God. We should not shy away from it. We should dive into it, and we should enjoy the work that we do.
Mm-hmm. Will there be more work competition in heaven because there will be so many occupations that won't exist? Politicians, police,
you know,
fire,
there's going to be all kinds of work that we can't imagine on this side.
Yeah, I guess so. And then you obviously are grateful that in your world, in your niche, you get the chance to work with entrepreneurs like yourself and business owners. And they're a fascinating group of people, aren't they?
They are. They can be a difficult and frustrating group at times, but they're also very fascinating. And I'm just so grateful to – I love the work that I do, working mm-hmm. with business owners, turning around businesses, executive coaching, resolving conflict, helping families do transition. I love all of that work, and I find it highly meaningful and highly energizing, mm-hmm. even though at times it can be highly frustrating.
Yeah, well, there's always problems to solve. If they're hiring you, they've got some issues that they need some help with.
Well, that's very
and
true.
And you always step into some difficult, challenging relationships and situations that require a soft touch.
They do. And one of the things I really like about this job is that I get to work in a lot of different verticals or mm-hmm. industries.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get to learn about all kinds of different types of businesses that you would never learn about in college or an MBA program.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the food tradition at your house? I never understood that people like eat at noon. And I go, noon? That's not Thanksgiving dinner. When do you eat?
This year we're going to eat around 4.
Okay, see, that's more like dinner. But I also think, well, if you eat at noon, you're eating warm turkey sandwiches at 7 at
yeah.
night. That's kind of
yeah.
nice, too. You're getting a
yeah,
full
it
day
is.
Of turkey.
Well, we normally
day.
Eat at 1, but the Vikings are on at 11:30.
That's true. That's true.
So my wife is smart enough to know she's not going to get the guys pulled away from the TV while the Vikings are on, so we're going to eat after the Vikings
game. You know, and there's something to be said about anticipation. I recently tried to buy something on the internet, and usually when you buy something on the internet, it's fairly immediate gratification, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You can order it, and you can have it expedited, and they're shipping, and 2 days later you have it. But this
right.
particular item has been on back order for a while. And it's
what?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. So it's interesting how you kind of go to the website to check to see, is it back in stock? Is it back in stock? So I have all this anticipation, which is teaching me a little something about patience. But
well,
there's something
yeah.
about sitting in the house smelling the turkey for 6 hours.
Oh, my.
Isn't
yeah.
that half the fun of it?
It is half the fun of it. Yeah. It's every year I try to do a prime rib a dinner for my family.
Why? Oh, every year.
Every year.
Oh, okay.
Not
okay.
every week.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just pull out my wallet there and buy
yeah.
prime rib every
all right,
week.
All right.
But it's the same thing. It's that aroma that
yes.
just fills the house. It's
yeah.
just wonderful.
But there's that, you know, that anticipation.
Yes.
I think that's something
yes.
that we've lost in our society because we live in such immediate gratification, instant messaging, everything happens so quick. So we don't enjoy anything anymore.
You know, I bet if you Googled fast food turkey dinner Thanksgiving, I bet somebody somewhere is able to pull up to your house with an entire turkey dinner, deliver it, put it on your table, and in 10 minutes.
Don't tease me.
Don't
tease me. Yeah.
Why?
All right. Thanks so much, Bill. I'll see you next week. 26 after the hour. Be back. Jonathan Den Hartog is in the green room. You're going to get a big lesson on Thanksgiving. Be back in a minute. Good morning. 31 minutes after the hour, we're going to take a little break for news and then get ready because Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog is already in studio. We're going to talk about Thanksgiving with him from a historical perspective. So stay tuned. Be right back.
Years ago, I met a high school boy who kept a secret about an inappropriate relationship with an older woman. The personal shame and pressure of keeping that secret drove him to give up everything he loved. and to hurt his closest relationships. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. When the boy's secret was finally exposed, his parents couldn't believe he didn't confide in them sooner. He said, "You never ask. Mom, Dad, there's power in asking questions. No matter what inappropriate behaviors your teen engages in, you can connect with your kids by asking insightful questions. Then, wait for them to answer. Don't try to fill in the awkward silence with more words. You'll be surprised how much you learn about your teen because you ask and because you listen."
Find more help from Mark Gregston at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Good morning, 24 minutes until the top of the hour. The time has come. And in this corner from Pella, Iowa, history professor here at the University of Northwestern, Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog is with us. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning. The real question is, what's in the other corner? Is it error and falsehood? In which case, I want to deliver a knockout blow.
Which I believe you will. Yeah, I love that snappy banter already. So let's talk about Thanksgiving. Let's talk about gratitude.
You know what?
Where do we begin?
It strikes me that the Thanksgiving holiday, we think of it as all of the trappings. The turkey, maybe Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Or football.
Football.
Yep.
But it's rooted in gratitude. And I think the important piece is that gratitude is directed somewhere. It's directed to God. Mm-hmm. It's not, oh, I should be thankful to the indifferent universe.
Right.
No, the Christian celebration of Thanksgiving is directed to a God who has blessed us, and we recognize those blessings, and it helps us realize, wait a minute, we didn't accomplish everything ourselves. It's not all about us, but we have received gifts both in the physical world and in the spiritual world from a specific source, and that is God.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to the ways in which the pilgrims, if we want to start there, endured incredible hardship and suffered incredible devastation their first year, and yet despite that, the first thing they wanted to do when they landed was to find a place to pray and worship God.
Right. So in American history, there are all of these moments of giving thanks. Right, we usually go to the pilgrims first, and we can go there, but
we don't have to go there. Yeah.
But all the way along, there's been this, I think, important recognition of giving thanks to God. Very often, at least in the American nation, the invitation has been a very non-sectarian one, meaning, we're not going to tell you where you should go to give thanks, but you should go give thanks somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Pick your church, pick your place of assembly, and go be thankful there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an important marker here. Now, going back, right, even a century and a half before that, we really do see some of the first colonial arrivals giving thanks. And that's right, with our favorite pilgrims in Plymouth. That's right. They get off the Mayflower. They say, let's line things up correctly on board the Mayflower. They have to write a Mayflower compact. They arrive and they do give thanks. And then what we often remember is two Thanksgivings, 1621, the year after they arrive. And then 2 years later, they have another reason to be really thankful.
Mm-hmm. Do say more?
Yeah. So in 1620, they arrive in December. It's winter. It's unpleasant. They have mm-hmm. to throw up their buildings very quickly. And during that first winter, it's incredibly hard. All of them suffer. Of 100 Mayflower people, 50 of them die that first winter. So they lose half of their group.
Wow.
And then they are able to recover a little bit. Famously with the help of Indians like Samoset and Squanto. But then their first Thanksgiving is 1621, when we know they're giving thanks for the bounty that has come in. And we know, because we understand the Christian character of the pilgrim endeavor, that was tied with religious giving of thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Then 2 years later, they record a second moment when they're facing drought throughout the summer. And they say, you know, we've done everything that's worked in the past. Why isn't going it to rain? They set up a day of prayer for the rain, and then later gentle rains come and the harvest gets in. So they have another reason to be really thankful.
Wow, that's I did not know about the drought. Where would I have learned that? Because I didn't pay attention in high school history.
I think reading some of the sources is really good. The fun thing about the first Thanksgiving, we have it in one source. Mm-hmm. The entire Thanksgiving is tabulated in about 300 words.
Okay.
Now with the drought, the source is the governor of the Plymouth Colony. His name is William Bradford, and he actually writes the classic account of the Pilgrims called Of Plymouth Plantation. So if you're looking for some good original source reading, Bradford's Of Plymouth Plantation, and you can see deeply how he's thinking about the Christian endeavor, the
Can
Pilgrims.
You give us a little tease on that?
Yeah. So I think the most important thing from Bradford is he says these people going over, they knew they were pilgrims, right? He's the one that gives them the term pilgrims. And the other piece is he lays out why they're going. And he says, we weren't going for light reasons. We weren't just going on a jaunt because we thought it would be a good idea, but we considered this carefully. We got a lot of advice from other Christians, and we said, we think this is God's leading. And in that, then, he kind of goes through and unpacks, why would we want to leave Holland, right? Because they've gone from England to Holland for religious liberty. They've been able to worship, but he says, well, look, our lives are hard. We want not only to be able to worship, but to live in a sustainable way and to make our endeavor so attractive that others will come and join us. And they felt like they couldn't do that in Holland. And even beyond that, he really worried that their children were, first of all, being ground down economically. So they were looking for some economic opportunities. And he worried that they were taking on the culture surrounding them. And so he thought, people are worried too much about fancy dress, and they're being disobedient to their parents. And he said, and even young people are mixing men and women in inappropriate ways. And so we need to set up a culture that's going to support our full way of life that would be best glorifying to God.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, what are some other key players and names that we should be readily familiar with, maybe in topics of conversation or on the table? William Bradford. Who else?
Yeah, it'd be good, right? So we can drop a couple of names. I actually think Bradford is the biggest name.
Okay.
We should point out that William Brewster is the elder helping to lead. But can I also say this would be a great time to also drop the name of Martin Luther, right? Because here we are in the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. I'd want to draw a really direct line between what Martin Luther was doing and saying we need to give the scriptures to the people, we need to emphasize faith, and recognize that all believers have a chance to be priests giving worship to God. Luther was only 100 years before the Pilgrims, and the Pilgrims are deeply rooted in the Protestant Reformation.
Interesting. I would not have guessed that either. That's really interesting. All right, we're going to take a little break. And if you have a question for Jonathan, maybe about something historical from Thanksgiving, and we would be more than happy to take that question, 1-877-933-2484, or you can email it to me, bill@myfaithradio.com. We'll take a short break and return with Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog in just a minute. Minutes till the top of the hour. I have Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog in studio. Jonathan, so if you're talking to a niece or nephew or connecting with relatives who are younger and maybe are in school, the question might be, what are the textbooks and teachers teaching you nowadays about Thanksgiving?
Well, I think that would be a great leading question, right? Just to ask and see what they say. Now, I've looked at a lot of textbooks, and I think it is concerning, right? Sometimes the Pilgrims are not mentioned at all, right? Or they're downplayed, right? Hmm. Let's get past that colonial settlement to something more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of problematic. Other times they're offered as, well, they were thankful and dot, dot, dot with no sense of who or what to be thankful for. There even are some textbooks that say, well, they were really thankful for the Indians, right? They were really grateful to the Indians for the help.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not represented in the sources. And again, with these pilgrims, they really are clearly directing their thanks to God, right? That it has as a direct reference. And so this is one of the myths. I do actually bring this up in my U.S. history classes at Northwestern, and it's a myth I love to explode. So I love to be an early American myth buster.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one, right? That, you know, on one hand, we need to really appreciate what they're doing. On the other, we also say, well, we don't know everything that we think we know about the pilgrims either. So telling that historical story and correcting some of that error is, I think, a really beneficial thing that we do in our history classes.
Yeah. I have a caller on the line. Frank is calling in from South St. Paul. Good morning, Frank. You have a question for Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog.
Good morning. Marshall's book, The Light and the Glory, makes much of the story of Squanto and the incredible role that he had in saving the pilgrims' lives. Could you elaborate upon that, please?
Thank you, Frank. What do you know about Squanto?
Yeah, this is really worth talking about. Although, you know, Squanto is also a little bit of a figure who we don't know as much about as we would like. Again, but there are important ways in which two Indians. First of all, an Indian named Samoset, who makes first contact with the pilgrims, and then his friend Squanto come in and help them. There is something that seems rather providential about the way these are two Indians who have learned English, right? So it addresses the language problem right off the bat. Secondly, they've had contact with Englishmen. They've actually spent small time in England because of various travels that they've taken. And so then they're Squanto stays with the pilgrims to help them. And even though his entire tribe has been wiped out by disease, he's still alive. He knows the area and he knows how to grow crops. And so the pilgrims, especially 1621, welcome him and they're very grateful for his help. But again, the kind of questionable piece is, you know, we don't know all of his intentions, and later on he appears to have gotten some schemes of his own, which is fine. But in their initial settling, he proves to be a great blessing for them.
That's a great call and a great piece of information on Squanto. Does Squanto show up in the textbooks?
Often he does. Right, there is an interest in the Indian perspective of things. And the fun part when you read our one account of Thanksgiving is that it says the Indians came amongst us. And so we don't know if the pilgrims invited them or if the Indian tribes, Chief Massasoit and his braves simply showed up and said, hey, we should, you know, do something, or hey, why don't you just come up with some food for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's unclear what all the intentions are, which then we have all this elaboration that is not actually supported by the history that we know.
Mm-hmm. What other little things should we be interested in looking into if we're going to spend a little time getting ready to get our mind back in the idea of what are the roots of Thanksgiving and what God intended for us to learn from this? What other pieces of conversation can we bring to the table tomorrow?
Yeah, I would ask, did you know that lots of presidents have issued Thanksgiving proclamations,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And it might be worth digging up some of the other Thanksgiving proclamations. Now, this fall, I've been thinking a lot about George Washington's first Thanksgiving proclamation, right? Where under the new Constitution, they were saying, well, should we have a Thanksgiving proclamation or not? It's not in the Constitution. Could we do it? Congress gets together, and actually a New Jersey Presbyterian by the name of Elias Boudinot stands up and says, you know, we should have a Thanksgiving proclamation. And so it's debated, but the House and the Senate come together and they go and they invite President Washington to issue a proclamation for the country. So it might be worth for people Googling George Washington's 1789 proclamation. And some of the interesting pieces there are the way he says we should pray that we can all fulfill our duties, mm-hmm. right? He's interested in upright activity for both private citizens and public officials, which I think is kind of interesting these days.
No kidding. Yeah.
And so he says that we can fulfill our duties, that we can pass good, wise, and just laws, right? That he has this concern so that it's Thanksgiving is always also coupled with prayer for continued blessings, right? So it's a time of reflection, right? So maybe that could be another attitude that we generate, right? Not only are we celebrating good things and feasting, but we're also using it for prayer and reflection. And so by keeping our Thanksgiving celebrations rooted in that perspective, it can remind us that we need to be reflecting on our lives as well.
Mm-hmm. What are some traditions that we should look at and maybe revisit? I love this idea of gratitude and prayer. And what is it like at your house? So does the food come out and everything's hot and piping, and then you all hold hands and kind of give a prayer and then move on? It seems like it'd be a great opportunity to gather for prayer an hour before dinner served and actually be really intentional about praying with a gratitude and actually spending time when you're not salivating.
That's a good idea. I'll bring that home and see what we can do. We always make it a point of thinking about what are we thankful for.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was reminded even in my church this past Sunday, it's not just about the good stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? Our Thanksgiving is rooted in the love of God, right? And so our pastor preached on the ways that God's love endures forever. And that's what we root our Thanksgiving in. So then in the Den Hartog household, we will definitely reflect for all of us, for all of our family, from both youngsters up to retired people.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be reflecting on what are we thankful for. And I think that's right to do it a little bit in advance, because when the food is there and the turkey's there and the stuffing's there, I've found even for myself, I get a little bit distracted. I'm less thinking about deep moral reflection, and I'm more thinking that would look really good on my plate here in the next several seconds.
Oh, yeah.
So taking some time ahead of time out of the bustle is probably a really wise suggestion.
Yeah, I would just encourage I try to, when I go to restaurants with believers, when I sit down, I go, well, let's pray right now. After you've got your general coffee and water going, it seems like it's a good time to be intentional, and you can be slow about it, and you don't have to race. And usually when the food comes, everybody races to pray, and then the waiter or waitress comes back and they're trying to help you, and then there's that awkward moment. It seems like prayer and giving thanks should be central focus to the day.
That's the way it has been in the past, and I think we get away from that when we focus again just on the stuff, or increasingly just on the stuff that we're going to buy. Like, hey, let's get through this family time because I need to go buy something and give somebody else my money to consume some more.
Right.
And the exact opposite is kind of the American tradition. So
yeah.
If it forces us to slow down, spend community time both with our families and maybe with our church communities, that can be a really helpful counter to the larger culture, which is telling us it's all about you and you just need to buy stuff, more stuff.
Yeah, and to all people, shut your modem off and your router so nobody can be online.
I love that idea. Unplug it from
just
the wall.
Unplug it. Well, then people with data can probably get on. But the point is, put electronics away. Just enjoy your family, okay? Jonathan, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving to
Thank you
and yours.
3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up the show. A listener named Jill said she's thankful for her house. She's been an apartment dweller most of her life. She's looking out her kitchen window this morning, seeing the frosty ground that was her garden, remembering the taste of fresh-picked raspberries, enjoying her neighborhood. Thank you, Jesus, for this blessing. See, we have a lot to be grateful for. Thanks for listening today. Have a great Thanksgiving, and I'll see you soon. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.